First of all, this is the second time that Reverend Pinckney has been thrown in jail by the powers that be in Benton Harbor. The first time they did a recall election some years ago, you know, because the mayor, well, in fact, the history of Benton Harbor has been that Benton Harbor is the international headquarters for the Whirlpool Corporation. And the Whirlpool Corporation was the main employer in the area. Then there were other employers there. And I remember, you know, hearing about Benton Harbor in the 70s and 80s. It was a very nice place to live, you know, very middle class. Everybody had a job, this sort of thing. Well, when Whirlpool decided they weren't going to do production any longer, it had an extreme bad effect on the community. People became unemployed. Today, Benton Harbor is, if not the poorest, one of the poorest cities in Michigan as of today. And it directly goes back to Whirlpool. So, of course, there was a lot of animosity there about that. You know, people become homeless. You see the poverty growing there. And out of this, I guess one of the things that happened, what caused the first time around there to be problems, was that the police began to crack down on people, much of what we see coming out right now about, like, the Laquan McDonald case. A lot of that was going on in Benton Harbor.
You're saying there were murders?
Oh, sure. I mean, the police were actually killing people. And one particular young man, his name was Terrence, but everybody called him T-Shirt. That was his nickname. And the police were chasing him on his motorcycle. And I guess he had called in and said, well, there must have been a warrant out for him or something, but he had called in that he was going to come down and turn himself into the police. And they intercepted him on the way there and started, you know, messing with him. And so it developed into a chase. And they hit his vehicle with their police car, and he flew through the air and hit the side of a building and was killed. And people who witnessed the thing said it was murder. They said they're just out to kill him. And when people came to try and have a vigil, the police jumped on them and, you know, attacked the vigil, and it turned into a rebellion, into a riot. And this was back in 2003. And so the governor promised they were going to do something about it, but instead of doing something about it, they sent into Benton Harbor what's called emergency managers. And so emergency managers have the ability to be sent in by the governor, and they take over for your elected officials. In other words, no more mayor, no more city council. All the decisions are made by these folks. And instead of offering jobs and solving some of the problems in Benton Harbor, they began to simply start buying up all the land, stealing, you know, water, taking, like, public parks and turning them over to the property of Whirlpool Corporation. All this sort of thing started happening. And so instead of the problem getting better, it got worse. And so step forward people like, like Reverend Pinckney, trying to do something to better the community. And so it's always been in Benton Harbor where the mayor has always been somebody in the hip pocket of Whirlpool. So they did a recall election. And in this recall election, they had actually won the election before the election started because they used early voting. And it was such a shock to Whirlpool and such a shock to, to the powers that be. They said, hey, there must be something going on here. And they went around and they couldn't find anything. So they did trumped up charges, had Reverend Pinckney actually on probation or on whatever they call it, where you don't go to jail, but you stay home or whatever. And so he was writing about this in community newspapers, you know, and basically quoted the Bible saying that, you know, mistreatment of the poor is not looked well upon by God, and that God will punish you for this, for mistreating the poor. And they actually called in some of the specifics of it. They called in people into court who were theologians to say, well, yeah, he's got pull with the Almighty. He, you know, that's like a threat. So they locked him up, threw him in prison. He won on appeal and got out. And so here we are back again last year. They're having another recall election. It looks like they got enough signatures. They're about to do the election. And in order to set aside, last time they were able to set aside the election by trumped up charges and throwing Pinckney in jail. This time, the same thing. If it worked once, let's do it again, right? I guess is their attitude. And so they, again, come up with trumped up charges, this time saying that he changed five names, or I'm sorry, five dates not names, on the petition. And you have in court where people come into court and they testify, that's my name, I changed the date when I realized I put the wrong date, right? And then other people come into court and say, yeah, I was present when that date was changed over there, and, you know, that was not Reverend Pinkney, he was not there. And so you have evidence presented in court basically saying that he's not guilty of this crime, and yet, you know, they go out and get an all-white jury in order to, you know, they use the race card, all-black town, you get all-white jury to ensure that you're going to get what you're going to get. Then they instruct this jury that you don't need evidence. You can convict this man simply on, you know, you think he did it. What are you supposed to use if you don't have evidence, right? So they go in and deliberate, and he's convicted. And compare this with a fellow in Wisconsin who a few years back got in court and said, hey, I changed 100 names on a petition, on a recall petition. Didn't do a day in jail. He's in open court admitting he did this. Didn't do a day in jail. Yet and still, this is a misdemeanor, right? How is it you have a misdemeanor crime for which there's no evidence, and you have Reverend Pinckney being given 2.5 to 10 years in prison for that? It's political. That's all you can see it as. It's in order to stop the will of the people. And the poetic justice in this is that when they finally did have the election in November, it just about a month or so, 6 weeks ago when they had the election, the mayor, who was, you know, backed by a whirlpool, lost, and he lost big. He, you know, the guy that won was Marcus Muhammad, and Marcus Muhammad won with 60% of the vote and 90% of the young vote. So it was a landslide for him. And now, for the first time in the memory of people who live in Benton Harbor, you have somebody who's mayor that's not in the hip pocket of the Whirlpool Corporation. So that's the story. And so what you have is Reverend Pinckney then going to Lakeland Prison.
Where is Lakeland Prison, Joe?
It's not too far. I actually drove there, and you know how it is when you go somewhere you don't know about. I've been there, and I visited him. It's maybe not very far from where he lives. You know, you can get there within an hour and a half of where he lives. You know, it was close to home, and he was able to garner support for all this injustice that's been going on. And I think that the powers that be in Michigan decided he was getting too much support there. People in the prison even liked him. He heard one comment as he was leaving where they were saying, they must really hate this guy because, you know, he's no trouble here. And yet they're kicking him out of that prison, and they send him way up to, you know, close to the Canadian border in the peninsula up there, the northern peninsula in Michigan, where he's 500 miles away from home, 500 miles away from support. They cut off his ability to make phone calls, and they throw him in the they call it, the hole, the solitary confinement. And for what? You know, so he, last time I heard, when he was able to get word out, he had won that, you know, they have a system where they write you tickets. And he won on all these tickets where, you know, he was accused of doing things that he wasn't doing. So you're able to have a hearing, and he won in his hearing. Yet still, he still doesn't have phone privileges. So it's very obvious that what they're doing is that they're attempting to make him be a criminal, but for what? For fighting for democracy in his city? In a city that had been taken over, if you will, by the Whirlpool Corporation. So if there's a crime he's committed, the crime is, I guess, is that if you challenge Whirlpool or these corporations, then you're a criminal, regardless of whether you've done anything or not.
Reverend Pinckney, would you say he has got quite a bit of support in Benton Harbor?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the people there are still fighting. There's an organization, Banco, it's an organization that, that he's the head of. And by the way, I should mention, it seemed like during the entire trial, instead of using evidence, what the prosecution was doing is they were using the fact that Banco, all their questions had to do with Banco. What is Banco doing? And part of it is that Banco was a community organization that saw the community under attack, and they were doing something about it. And part of the things what they were doing about it is, for instance, they were going to court and watching what goes on in court. And, you know, you had all this injustice similar to what's going on here in Chicago that's got the mayor right now of Chicago under a microscope, if you will. Those same exact things were going on in Benton Harbor.
Court watching is often necessary if there is to be justice.
Absolutely.
BANCO stands for Black Autonomy Network Community Organization, and they say their mission is working for economic and social justice in Benton Harbor, Michigan, exposing state and local NAACP corruption. What do you know about the NAACP and corruption in the state of Michigan?
I mean, I can't say for sure. I can only, suggest that, you know, Whirlpool has his fingers in everything, everywhere. And it's not, above what could happen that a Whirlpool would approach the NAACP and say, hey, you know, if you guys could split yourselves off from Reverend Pinckney, or at least get him out of the lead. He was once the president of the chapter there, the local chapter of the NAACP, very successful chapter in Benton Harbor. And there's no question about Whirlpool hated Reverend Pinckney. So, I mean, who knows? A corporation could say, hey, NAACP, I've got a huge donation for you. Just do me a favor. Like, you know, just give Reverend Pinckney a hard time, or, you know, do something else. Don't do it here in this area with us. Here's a huge donation. They're not beyond doing stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Be interested if all that came out.
We're speaking with Joe Peery, who's a member of the Reverend Pinckney Defense Committee. What do you suggest people do if they're concerned about Reverend Pinckney's situation?
The first part is to get the message out. And, you know, the message that Reverend Pinckney has always been trying to get out is, look, if they can do this stuff in Michigan, it's not very long before they can do that in your part of the world. Actually, this might be a good chance for me to read this. I'd like to read this email I just received last night. Is that okay?
Please, go ahead.
And it gets into this. All right. This was actually sent to me by one of the members of our National Defense Committee. And let me read it. I'll just start from the beginning. So Reverend Pinckney is now able to communicate by email using the prison email system. His phone privileges are still suspended. Today, several supporters received two messages sent by Reverend Pinckney yesterday, which was on Tuesday, December 15th. The first message sent at noon did not contain anything unusual. He wrote that he was happy that last Saturday's emergency conference meeting that went on in Detroit went well, and that he is still experiencing daily harassment, threats, and intimidation, and that he will continue to speak out to expose corruption and prisoner abuses at Marquette Branch Prison. The second message sent just 6 hours later, the same day, had a very different tone. Reverend Pinckney's emails are likely to be read by prison officials, and he may not be able to discuss in detail the threats he is coping with. We believe the message may be an SOS alerting us to a sudden escalation in the level of danger in his current situation. While we do not want to alarm supporters unnecessarily in an abundance of caution, we should take what actions we can to let the MDOC, the Michigan Department of Corrections, know we are watching closely. I'm going to read you what actually came from Reverend Pinckney. Reverend Pinckney's second message stated in part, quote, I have been placed in a hostile environment. The Department of Corrections knew or should have known that the threatening, harassing, and intimidating behavior by correction officer Schretter, that's spelled S-C-H-R-E-T-T-E-R, created a hostile environment, and the department failed to implement corrective measures to protect me. The department on purpose set me up for failure. Their action can never serve a legitimate penological purpose. The Department of Corrections has jurisdiction and power to promulgate rules and standards, but failed to do so to protect me. They have continuously threatened, harassed, and intimidated me. I am even afraid that they will plant a weapon in my locker. We must make this known as soon as possible. All right, and so what Reverend Pinckney has been asking people to do is that you can call, for instance, the governor, and there's a script that you can have. You can say your name. My name is so-and-so. I'm calling from this particular city or place. I'm calling about Reverend Edward Pinckney, ID number 294671. I'm concerned about the Reverend's health and safety. The governor's phone number is 517-373-3400. You can tell him you are concerned about Reverend Pinckney's safety in an environment of harassment, threats, and intimidation and hostility. Tell him to restore Reverend Pinckney's phone access, to transfer Reverend Pinckney back to Lakeland Prison, and to remove Robert Naple as the warden of Marquette Prison. Secondly, you can call the Legislative Corrections Ombudsman, who's Keith Barber, and demand an investigation into Reverend Pinckney's treatment. And his phone number is 517-373-8573. Third, you can call the Michigan Department of Corrections Director Heidi Washington, and you can call her at 517-241-7238. And with the same message, of course, and if you are unable to reach her, you can ask to speak to Sandy Simon, who is her assistant. Fourth, you can call Marquette Branch Prison, and their phone number is 906-226-6531, and demand assurance that Reverend Pinckney is safe and not being mistreated or threatened by any staff members. Now, okay. Actually, before I call, let me say this. Before I called you, I had spoken to Reverend Pinckney's wife. So it was approximately about a half an hour ago. And I asked her just to get some feedback what effect these calls were having. And she told me that when people started calling the governor, the ombudsman, you know, the jail, and the person who's over the Michigan Department of Corrections, it was having an effect because they felt like, oh, wow, you know, this is exposing what's going on, shining a light on what's going on, and they backed up for a while. But what happened was the calls began to kind of wane, and they're right back to doing the same thing over again. So it's very important that people, you know, do these calls.
Tell us about how you got involved in the defense committee.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, I was actually living in Los Angeles when I first heard about Reverend Pinckney's case. It was approximately about 6 years ago. He was in the middle of being locked up, you know, the first time. And I couldn't believe it. I was actually flabbergasted that, you know, when I heard the story, I was like, you locked a guy up for quoting Deuteronomy. That's crazy. And actually, it was on Pacifica Radio out there, one of those Pacifica Radio stations that Amy Goodman is and Democracy Now! Is affiliated with. And so I later left L.A. and came back to Chicago. I'm originally here from Chicago. Came back to Chicago. And when I got here, it's very close. And I again started hearing about Reverend Pinckney's case. So I had actually just gotten out of the prison, won on appeal, and you know, was exonerated and let out. And so I hooked up with some people here in Chicago and went up to Benton Harbor, and I was invited back to come back and actually speak to Banco, which I've done on numerous occasions, and help with the organizing. And we actually put together videos and this sort of thing to get the word out about what's happening there. And I just kept going back. And the second time around, when the new issue happened around the new recall, Reverend Pinckney had called me and asked me, would I be a spokesman for him? He wanted me to be a spokesperson for his defense and to get up, try and get him out of jail. And I, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And I've been working on it ever since. Here in Chicago, I mean, I'm an activist myself, have been for years. I live in the Cabrini Green area. And the other thing is that, what happened to Cabrini Green is very similar to what happened in Benton Harbor. I mean, basically, people who lived here for years can tell you they remember when there was full employment here. They can remember when, you know, you couldn't step out on your front porch and throw a rock without hitting a factory. And one by one, little by little, all those left. People lost their jobs, poverty, went into extreme poverty, you know, crime went up, all these things happened. And it's a very similar situation to Benton Harbor. And basically, you know, we in Cabrini, the way I looked at it is, well, they didn't need us anymore to work in their factory. So, you know, they use drugs and crime and all this as the excuse. But the real reason is they don't need us anymore. So, you know, get out. The same thing in Benton Harbor. You know, Whirlpool does not need the people who, you know, worked for us for so many years in Benton Harbor. No, thank you for a job well done. Just get out. We don't need you anymore. And we're going to replace you with, you know, Jack Nicklaus signature golf courses and a playground for the rich. That's what we're going to replace you with by any means necessary. And it seems that the means they're using that they feel is necessary is to overthrow democracy and use these emergency managers or corrupted, mayors like this last mayor.
Do you know anything about the group in Benton Harbor that organized following in Reverend Pinckney's footsteps to vote out that past mayor?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's, it's a coalition of people and groups. But, Banco is still very involved. And, actually, I've met some of the people who were the members of the city council. And they're really upset because, what happened to them was here you are voted into office. You're supposed to represent, the people of your city. And what happens is they send these emergency, there's like four emergency managers in that town, right, that they have to deal with. And so they've been working to cut back. I mean, basically, the emergency manager showed up and told the mayor and the city council, that you guys literally do not make decisions anymore. Every decision made, any and every decision made concerning that city is made by an emergency manager. And, so if the mayor is willing to be a figurehead, great, but you got to run it past the emergency manager. Well, they've been able to fight back the control of the emergency manager and get it. This is what they've been able to do over the last 5 years. And so a lot of the city council people who were fooled in the beginning about this thought, oh, it might be a good thing for the city. They'd say they're going to bring the city back and bring jobs and all that. Found out, no, that's not the case. The case is we want you out of Benton Harbor and there ain't going to be no jobs, is basically what the situation is.
How have they been pushing people out of Benton Harbor?
Well, I mean, if you don't have a job, you can't pay rent. If you can't pay rent, you're out on the street homeless. The other thing is, isn't that precisely what has been taking place in our city? I mean, look at the west side and the south side where, once upon a time, I remember when I came here in the 70s, you could ride down any street. You didn't see vacant lots. You didn't see, blocks and blocks of just empty blocks. Maybe one or two houses sitting on the block. How do you explain that? You explain that by the jobs left. The jobs are gone. They don't really need people anymore. And so people don't realize that the house comes with the job. And so if you haven't got a job, you definitely are not going to maintain a home or an apartment. Well, you could ask that same question right now in Chicago. That was definitely a campaign issue in the last mayoral election. But to talk about Benton Harbor, I mean, Whirlpool didn't pay any taxes. As a matter of fact, one of the things that Banco and the people of Benton Harbor were trying to do was get something put on the ballot that said if you do business in the city of Benton Harbor, you got to pay a 1% tax. Look, you can say all you want to, as these folks in Michigan are saying that run the state of Michigan, that, oh, yeah, there's a problem. We have to send an emergency manager to solve it. How are you solving the problem if you send an emergency manager that takes all things public and makes them the property of the particular corporation? I mean, that's not a solution to the problem. The other thing, by the way, that should be mentioned is that, there was a period of time that went on for some years where, young black men in Benton Harbor were coming up dead under crazy circumstances. And every single one of those cases was ruled, no foul play, no problem, no big deal. Well, yeah, guy's poisoned, another guy's shot, another guy's found drowned in the river. Well, come on, same thing here in Chicago. Oh, no problem. Or the police shot the guy. He was justified in doing it. Then you see the tape. No, he wasn't. Look, if you don't need a population, if you're, we're the poor folks. So let's take off our poor hat and put on our rich people's hat. Let's pretend we're the rich folks for a moment. If you don't need people anymore and you're not in the business of helping anybody, in other words, if they're not making you rich, you're not going to, give them any food, clothing, shelter, whatever the necessities of life are. Wouldn't you want to get rid of them? And wouldn't the way to get rid of them would be to terrorize the population? Sure, that's what's going on.
Before we wrap it up, Joe, do you have any last comments?
Yeah, also, you can go to Justice for Pinckney, and that's J-U-S-T-I-C-E. And then the number 4, Pinckney, PINKNEY.com. And you can get more information there as well. The only thing I wanted to mention, too, was that, the strategy is that they're using in Michigan is to really just keep a lid on this thing. That do not allow the word about what's happening to Reverend Pinckney to get out, because it's so ludicrous, the injustice in the thing, that if the word gets out, then people start shining a light on what the hell is going on in Michigan. And I'm not sure they want that. The other thing is that, yeah, now the population of the United States, the people of America, when they get this message, the question is going to be, well, why? What the heck's going on in Benton Harbor? And then you got the same thing that's going on right now with the Laquan Donald case right here in Chicago. Everybody in the country know, hell, even around the world know about that case. Same thing. By the way, I want to mention that when Reverend Pinckney when they sent the police out to his home to arrest him, it was not the regular police that went to his home to arrest him. They sent a SWAT team. A SWAT team. What do you need a SWAT team for, you know, a misdemeanor crime of changing dates on a petition, right? Even if he's guilty of it. I mean, what would you need a SWAT team for? You know, and the question must be asked, were they intending to kill him? And it just so happened that that was the day of his wife's birthday, and he took his, you know, his wife was, he tells a joke about it. He says, usually she's late, but she was on time, you know, getting herself together. They went out for dinner. And people started calling him on his cell phone saying, man, there's a SWAT team attacking your house right now. And he went, what? What the heck's going on? He called his lawyer, you know, and it went from there. But, you know, what do you need? This is political. This is about closing the mouth of a whistleblower. This is about stopping activism. This is about, you know, and by the way, you mentioned the word fascism, and the definition of fascism is the merger of, you know, government and the corporations, where you can't tell where one starts and the other ends. And this is what Reverend Pinckney was speaking out against, and they feel like they're going to use any means necessary to quiet him up and shut him up. Well, the only protection that Reverend Pinckney has is the American people. Trying to wake the American people up, and, you know, and he was successful at doing it, you know, to a limited degree, and they're trying to shut him up further, so we must answer it with, get the word out. We'd like to see Reverend Pinckney's name become a household name.
So I want to thank you, Joe Peery. If there's anything special comes along, let us know, and we'll get the word out. This is WZRD Chicago.